Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes, like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome. This way of looking at the past accomplishes several things. It gives perspective, a compassionate rendering of times past, by laying out what one experienced, what one has made of it, what is admirable. It is the admiring of it rather than the being of it that releases the person. To be the child survivor beyond its time is too over-identified with an injured archetype. To realize the inquiry and yet memorialize it allows thriving to come forth. Thriving is what was meant for us on this earth. Thriving, not just surviving, is our birthright as women. Do not cringe and make yourself small if you are called the black sheep, the maverick, the lone wolf. Those with slow seeing say a nonconformist is a blight on society. But it has been proven over the centuries that being different means standing at the edge, means one is practically guaranteed to make an original contribution, a useful and stunning contribution to her culture. When seeking guidance, don't ever listen to the tiny-hearted. Be kind to them. Heap them with blessings. Cajole them, but do not follow their advice. If you have ever been called defiant, incorrigible, forward, cunning, insurgent, unruly, rebellious, you're on the right track. Wild woman is close by. If you have never been called these things, there is yet time. Practice your wild woman. Andale, oh, andale, and again. Wow. So we're back to Women Who Run With the Wolves, the book by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, PhD. I think this is probably my 7th or 8th time reading from this book. And just so you all know, how these offerings are picked, I can't even say I picked them. I just wait for the person to come on the line, tap into their energy for a second, and just flip the book until it opens, aka bibliomancy. And every time, it seems perfect for the conversation. And I just want to share that magic with you because I think it's important for us to track magic, especially in these times, especially when these things happen, to understand that magic is a real living, breathing thing all its own. So yeah, with that said, welcome to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers. I am Zoe Flowers, obviously. And today we're holding a sacred conversation about healing from trauma through nature, plant medicine, and the courage of rebuilding life after unimaginable tragedies. And so I'm really excited to talk to Kristen Renaud today, a survivor of a mass shooting in 2021, whose profound journey led her away from the life she knew and into a deeper relationship with plants, gardening, and the earth itself. Kristen now runs Lightning Struck Gardens, a nonprofit dedicated to supporting survivors of gun violence through healing gardens, plant medicine, and community care. So Kristen, thank you for being here, and thank you for sharing your journey today. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited for this as well.
Yeah, that opening was so interesting. I mean,
it was.
Wow. So before we sort of dive in to the conversation, I'd love to just hear a little bit about who you are in the world.
Yeah. Great question.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I'm still defining for myself. Right now, I'm someone who's learning that there isn't a healing endpoint or a destination, but it's something that's really ongoing, and that's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm someone who's enough. It took me a long time to say that, and I'm someone who's enough. I'm a survivor of gun violence, but it doesn't define me.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm patient. I'm stable, and I'm self-loving. I'm an artist, a writer, a gardener, and I am aware and in awe of the cycles of nature and how they relate to grief. And that's something that I've really been focusing on lately. I'm excited to be here. And I'm going to try to speak from my heart instead of my head. It's hard to come out of my head,
yes,
but I'm
going
to try and speak from my heart from podcast.
Yeah. And this is your first time talking about this, yes?
Yes, this is my first time publicly speaking. I lead support groups for gun violence survivors, but they're very private.
Okay.
So this is my first time publicly speaking.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for laying the groundwork. And let's talk about sort of the before, who you were, what your life was like, what your dreams were. Are they similar to what they are now?
Yeah. it's funny. This is probably the hardest question to answer.
Okay.
It's a symptom of my PTSD and my grief that it almost feels like there's a glass wall between me and who I used to be. I'm very disconnected from that old person. I often find myself like hearing other people speak or finding things in my drawers, and I'm like, it's like memories resurface. Like, I used to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that this question is interesting because I'm back on that re-self-discovery path.
Yeah.
But who I was before, let's see. I was a lawyer and I did business consulting. So I used to do a lot of traveling and a lot of work with bigger companies, advising mergers and acquisitions. I was really unfulfilled in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had quit that very shortly before the shooting happened. So I was kind of in a life transition, and then a bigger life transition came along. So it feels almost even more removed and a
yeah.
little bit harder to figure out who I was before.
Yeah.
I look at it as like a vine was growing. And you prune the vine back down to the ground in the fall, and the roots remain the same, but it's a completely new plant that grows
yes.
up. And that's a lot of what I'm relating to right now. Who I was before, I've always been me. I'm still me. It's like
yeah.
almost like a sliding scale.
Yeah.
A lot of some of my qualities got amplified. Some of
yeah.
them got toned down.
Yeah. Some of your
yeah.
qualities got amplified. Some of your qualities got toned down. What parts of you got amplified?
My patience. I didn't really used to have a lot of patience before. It's not, it was there, but it was, I don't think anyone would have described me as a patient person.
Yeah.
And now I am. Now I'm described as a
wow.
patient person. Grief taught me a lot about patience. Plants taught me a lot about patience. It seemed to help. Things that got toned down, my perfectionism. I used to wear perfectionism like armor, and that sort of got stripped away during the
yeah.
grief and PTSD process.
Yes.
And as it does with a lot of people, I think
yes.
that's very common.
Absolutely.
And with that armor gone, it was almost like a freeing moment to kind of discover who I was outside of perfectionism, outside of those bounds.
Yeah.
So yeah, on a path of pretty intense self rediscovery as we talk right now. That's something I'm actively working on, both just in my personal life. I ask friends, I think about it a lot. And I'm kind of informationally gathering who I used to be and what used to go on.
And so for folks out there, can I say how we met?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah. Well, I haven't told anyone.
Well, let's not talk about it. Let's leave the people in suspense.
We can leave them in suspense.
Okay. So, one of the things about sort of that veil that comes from trauma, I mean, I definitely resonate with that. And as a survivor of lots of different traumas myself, there are things that I just don't remember. Now, I also engaged in lots of woo-woo activities to actually scrub certain memories from my mind. Like I've worked
with interesting.
Yes, I worked with different hypnotists over the years and different practitioners to go back to certain moments and my energy back from them. Or like there's some somatic work that you can do that has to do. It's kind of along the lines of tapping. I'm not sure if you're familiar with tapping at all. Mm-mm. Yeah. I can't explain it. Google it. It'll take
time. I'll Google it.
That'll be another. If there's anybody in the audience who does tapping, hit me up. I'll have you on the show to explain tapping. Yeah. But there's lots of different somatic things that I have been engaged in over, I would say, hardcore the past 10 years to sort of pull my energy back and to kind of erase those memories from my mind.
Yeah.
And it's actually been pretty helpful.
Wow.
Mm-hmm, it has. And there's the veil that trauma does. And then again, there's the active things that I actually was like, you know what? I don't want this memory in my conscious mind anymore. Mm-hmm. Who can help me get rid of it?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's helpful because these traumatic events can linger and they definitely change us in ways that are beneficial. But I found that they also can hold us back. Now, my trauma is much earlier than yours, right? That you're talking like 2021. Mine is like childhood and up, right? So there's like a lot of stuff to scrape out. And so you're of an age where you can make new decisions, you know, you can funnel your trauma actively into things. So that's really beneficial. Do you want to talk about that day or do you want to talk about other stuff?
I can share a little bit about that day. I was in Colorado. I used to live in Colorado. I lived in Denver for about 7 or 8 years. And I had just gone back for my first visit to return to pick up some of my stuff that I had left during the move. Where do I want to begin? I was in a square in a beautiful downtown area with red brick building and fountains and all these beautiful restaurants and artisan shops. And so I think that's what felt so violating is that it was just such a peaceful, ordinary Monday afternoon. Everyone was having lunch. People were just out. It's not where you expect or you think about any of those things are going to come. It was just such a beautiful day that's, I think, what felt so violating is that then all beautiful days became, uh-oh, something might happen.
Yeah.
But I did survive the shooting. It was pretty quick. It was about a couple minutes. Three people died, including the shooter. I was pretty close to it in the beginning. Very, very close to it. So I actively ran that day, actively hid during the shooting. SWAT had to escort me out of the building after they had cleared the area. So that entire process was really, really traumatizing to be sitting there throughout the whole process, really in lockdown while they were clearing the area, and to not really know what was going on during that waiting time. So yeah, that's my first time sharing that. I don't know if there's any other questions that you have or anything, but that's kind of what came out for me.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I was able to share that.
Me too. Thank you for that. Do you remember, and again, trauma makes the memory funny, right?
Yes, it does.
For certain things, we don't remember other things. Do you remember sort of in the early days afterwards, what those days were like? Were you with family? Were you by yourself?
Yeah. You know, I don't remember much of those early days.
Yeah.
I remember being numb, really just numb to everything. I was in complete shock and denial. I really did not quite comprehend what happened.
Yeah.
And I was surrounded by my family and friends. I had to fly home, which was pretty traumatic to be not wanting to be around a lot of people and then having to be contained in an airport. That piece was very hard for me to get to. But once I got home, I live near my parents and my sister, and I live with my husband. So there was a lot of support once I was home, which was beautiful. But I remember my face got really hollow. I lost like 20 pounds. Grief has a way of eating you away. But I just remember being quiet. Just the quiet and numbness is really what I remember.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because, and I know you don't know this about me, but I used to work for an organization called the Joyful Heart Foundation. And our main goal was to work with survivors of sexual assault. And we were based out of Manhattan. They also had an office in LA and Hawaii at the time. And I cannot believe I forgot. After the Newtown shooting in Connecticut, where I'm from.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I don't know. I was living in New York by then. I mean, I left Connecticut in my 20s, but my organization, for whatever reason that I can't remember now, they opened a treatment center for the Newtown community.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And it was during the holidays. I don't know if you remember that. And
yeah, I do.
I was in Connecticut and I was like the healer at the organization.
Yeah.
So, and I wasn't even working with them. I think I had quit by then. They consulted with me to run the treatment center.
Wow.
I ran the treatment center from like a couple of weeks after the shootings to New Year's Eve. And I would
thank you for that work.
I just totally forgot. Like, so I hired all the healing practitioners, all the services that they provided to the community. But I'm only sharing this because afterwards I didn't go outside for weeks.
It took me weeks to leave my house again. Yeah.
And I was quiet, like you're saying. And I just became very aware of my surroundings, and everything just really changed after that. Do you feel like people were supportive of your quiet and what you needed?
To an extent. I felt like everyone was really supportive in the beginning. They didn't get it, they didn't understand, and that was okay. But as my trauma and grief reaction continued to be pretty prolonged, there came this moment of not sure why you're not over it. And that's not to say that they were judging. That's not to say that they weren't supportive. I think we all have a natural timeline when other people's grief should be complete.
Absolutely.
And when it doesn't go on schedule, we can get ourselves antsy. And so I did get a lot of support in the beginning. And then, I felt like some of that support as my kind of shock continued. It took me years to really be comfortable in public again. And I'm still not comfortable in a lot of places. And that's okay. And it took me a lot to be able to explain it to other people, and explaining it to other people really helped them come along with my healing journey and my timeline a little bit better.
But I
felt really supported in the beginning, and then that natural timeline kind of naturally happens.
When was that timeline? When were they like, okay, mm-hmm. you should be further along?
And within a few months. Yeah. So it was June of 2021. And kind of when we got to the fall, there was more of that expectation of, why aren't you leaving the house yet? Why, you know, I was formally diagnosed with PTSD towards the end of the summer. There's almost like a 30 to 60 day period where that's just really common symptoms of grief. It's not necessarily PTSD. It's just a common reaction to trauma. And when it goes longer, it becomes that post-traumatic stress disorder. And having that diagnosis really helped. I think people understand that it wasn't just me on my own timeline, kind of refusing to leave the house. Around the fall is when it started to kind of be, everyone was still incredibly supportive. There was just almost like a pitying look, almost like a head tilt. Not sure. Yes. I know everyone's familiar with that head tilt.
Like, girl, when are you coming outside?
Yes. I would get a lot of, well, it's safe here. You know, it's safe here. And I think it's beautiful that people really tried to instill that and really tried to point that out. But I struggle still to this day with the word safety, because it's something that can be shattered so quickly that it's not a permanent state. And so when people are like, well, it's safe here. Well, it was safe there too.
That's right.
So there was that transition period where it was like, it took a while for people to really understand what I was going through and my healing journey, what it was going to look like.
Yeah. So. Yeah. How do you, I like to ask, what would you have wished could have happened? What do you wish the rest of it would have been? Or what do you wish for survivors?
I've thought about this question a lot. And one of the things, I want to say this without sounding accusatory.
Okay.
One of the things that happens is gun violence triggers some sort of response in all of us, just because it's such a highly politicized topic and conversation, that a lot of the times my response, or people's response to hearing I was a gun violence survivor, was to immediately politicize it. And people would ask, was the gun legal? Who was the shooter? Where was I? Things like that people wanted to parse out about the gun violence, or people would immediately jump into, this is why we need better gun control, or this is why we need different laws. And it depersonalized the situation. I wish that people had made room for my grief as a person, instead of putting that politicized spin on it. I think it's natural that people do that. It's such a hot topic right now, I think, in our society, that that's where people's brains go. But I wish that there was that patience to stay centered on the person who's grieving, the person who's in trauma, instead of trying to jump into those deeper political conversations. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Of course it makes sense. And I feel like it's It's similar to people's response to domestic violence and sexual violence. That depersonalization. We immediately want to try to make sense of something that is senseless.
Yes. Yes. It's almost like slowing down to look at a car accident on the highway. I don't know why it happens, but there's that natural slowdown where everyone wants to look at it, even though nobody wants to see a car accident. And I think that's a lot of what this is. It's so known as a trauma, but not experienced very often, that there's that curiosity that comes about that almost depersonalizes it.
And people want to depersonalize it because we don't want to think about it. We want to think that we could have done something different, at least in the case of domestic violence. I don't want to say with gun violence. But so when we hear these stories, the ask is to just slow down the politics, slow down that sort of, I guess, embedded response at this point. To just be with the person who's experienced the trauma. Not go to intellectualism.
Yes. I a lot of the time it came to people being like, well, let's try and solve the gun violence problem. And like, I don't need that at the moment. I need my grief to be heard and recognized and seen. And so there, that's kind of I think you said it so eloquently. There is an overlap between the domestic violence and the gun violence of the people try to separate themselves from it.
They do.
I think everyone wants to imagine that I was somewhere they will never be, so that they can have this sense of safety of, well, that will never happen to me. And that's just, I think that's why it's so violating to survive a shooting like this, because it's somewhere where everyone is just naturally, you're just there in your community.
And so how do you walk that walk now between being in the world with your experiences? How do you walk that walk? Is that sort of where the plants come in?
Yeah, the plants really help me. The plants are both my own personal healing and my own quiet time, my own space, my own journey and adventure. But they're also, they're also the livelihood of the nonprofit. I sell native plants and I sell seeds and things like that to be able to bring in money for the nonprofit. One thing that I do is I help people create memorial gardens. So I'll send them seed packets or plant cuttings and they can start a memorial plant or a memorial garden. And having that connection with the plants, it matters. How I walk that walk as a survivor. Oof, great question. I think it's tricky. I come back to a lot constantly of the tower card in tarot. It's almost like a very morbid analogy, but it brings me a lot of hope that sometimes you come into situations where, just like in the card, there's nothing to do but leave that situation. There's nothing to do but jump. There's only rubble left. And that's kind of how I felt after the shooting. But the card that comes after is the star card.
Yes.
And someone once told me, I don't know if it's true, but it helps me, that the flames falling around the people in the artwork as they're coming down can also signify seeds that they're throwing out on the way down. I had never heard that interpretation.
Me either.
And that interpretation really helped me. And so I looked at that as I came to a point where I had to just leave that trauma. I had to leave that space. I had to metaphorically jump, but I planted these beautiful seeds. I threw out these seeds on the way down, and I have landed in a new garden in my life, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I'm like fighting myself not to grab my tarot card. I'm like, I have my deck with all my notes on it. And I'm like,
yeah.
What notes did I put on this? For people who are not familiar with the tarot, the tower card is an image. I'd like to say the king and the queen, they've been thrown out of the castle. Lightning has struck. They've been thrown out. There's fire at the top and there's flames and smoke and all of these things coming out of the tower. And then there are these little like flames, which could be looked at as seeds. I literally never thought about it like that before, but yeah, that's very interesting. And then we get to the star card, which is that light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah, I like that. I like that. So how did you make your way to plants? That you always did? Were you always a gardener? Like,
I was always into plants. I grew up with my mom planting a lot, but I will say I was bad at plants. Okay. I was that person who wanted to love plants, wanted to love houseplants, and killed them all.
Okay.
During the pandemic, during lockdown, I decided I was going to keep a plant alive. And that was really one of my first ways that I changed my relationship with the plants. Before I had houseplants, and I would put them in a spot and they would slowly die and I didn't know what was going on and I was overwatering and overloving them and it would just not work out. And this plant that I brought in, it was just a spider plant, pretty typical, easier house plant. And I was just really determined to keep it alive. And I finally listened to it and slowed down with it and did research on it and began to understand more of its cycles that it needed.
Yes.
And then around that time in 2020, my husband and I also moved from an apartment downtown to a house in the country. So we now live in the middle of nowhere in the woods. And so I started having a completely different relationship with nature that I had had for years before living in an apartment.
I see.
You know, just this morning, I found a snake in the wall of my house. So there's like a completely different relationship with
nature. Come on, snake. Come on, rebirth, regeneration.
Yes.
I love it.
It was a sign.
I love it. Before our call on the full moon.
I know.
Moon in Scorpio. There's so much magic of this day that we're going to have to talk about that just came into my mind.
There's so much magic.
I mean,
yeah.
Can we talk about the fact that, are you into astrology?
I want to be, but I don't understand it.
Okay.
I'm a baby. I'm a newbie.
Excellent. Excellent. So listeners, today is May 12th. It is the full moon in Scorpio. Full moons are a time of releasing, right? Of endings. Boom. Here go the snake that's shedding its skin. La, la, la. But we're also in Taurus season, which is an earth sign, which is fixed earth. And in astrology, a fixed earth sign is when you are firmly in the season, right? We are firmly in Taurus season. And Taurus season so we're in that planting time. So it's so magical that we're talking about like this rebirthing that you did with this plant medicine. Like at the most perfect, like there couldn't have been a more perfect day for this conversation. And if I'm not mistaken, weren't we supposed to meet another day?
Yes, we were supposed to meet on Wednesday. And I actually rescheduled it to be the full moon on purpose.
Period. And so as we were talking about, the tarot card. So of course I had to pull a card. So here's our card for our conversation. Hello, Justice.
Oh, yes, Justice.
Justice Beautiful. Has shown up. And in this deck, it's surrounded by leaves. And of course, Justice is rules the sign of Libra, another Venus dominated sign like Taurus. And so I just love this, especially with our conversation. We have Justice, and then we have the Three of Cups, which is about celebration. So we have air and we have water here. So I'm liking that we have justice and celebration with regards to this gun violence conversation. Maybe we'll get some justice at some point.
Yeah. Things to think about.
And you opened the door with the tower. So it's like we have this destruction, then we have Taurus, then we have the Three of Cups.
Yes.
So maybe there'll be something to celebrate.
I think just being on this podcast and talking with you is enough to celebrate.
I think so too, right? I think so. Yeah, there's just like so much magic of this day. So you went from a person who's like, I'm going to make this commitment. I'm going to keep this plant alive. I'm going to just like do this thing, to now being somebody who's rewilding your land. And so can you explain to people who've never heard that term, like what rewilding your land looks like and what inspired you to do it?
Yes. So I came from a background in environmental sciences. That's what I did in undergrad. I really wanted to go be an environmental lawyer. I went to law school, became a consultant with the goal of becoming an environmental consultant, but life. So I had this pretty intense background in environmentalism, knowing that there was a need for native species and knowing that there's a decline in our biodiversity. So when I came to this land, all I wanted was to be able to increase the native plants, increase the biodiversity, and the people who were here before. I don't know exactly all that they did, but there were poison boxes and traps and shotgun shells in the drip garden. And there were no animals, like not even a squirrel on our property. And the birds really wouldn't come in and around. It was whatever they had been doing, it was very quiet. There just wasn't a lot.
Got it.
And so my goal was to bring in all that I could for the land and to return it to what it's supposed to be, what it was like before we came in and planted our forsythia bushes, our hostas, the daffodils. Those are all beautiful plants and they're lovely. I see why people plant them, but they don't provide really any benefit to the wildlife or to the animals. In fact, a lot of those plants are sterile, so the pollinators can't get any food from it. So there's a lot of plants that I just knew weren't there helping my yard, and I wanted to be of service to my land. So I started with bringing in native plants, which started pretty slow and pretty small. I found a couple plants here or there at nurseries and things, but mostly I had to wait for seeds to come to gather seeds. I took cuttings of bushes and propagated them. And I have little trees that are like a foot tall that'll take 10 years to bloom, but they're out there, they're doing it. And so it really just became a learning exercise of what existed here before, what wants to exist here and benefit my plants and my birds and my wildlife. I notice a difference now in my yard. We have red squirrels and gray squirrels. I even have a black squirrel, which is a pretty rare squirrel. I have
not in Canada, honey, not in Montreal.
Really? Yeah, they're rare. They're really rare.
Not here.
I had not really seen one.
Me either.
Okay, that's funny.
Till I came here.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I thought it was an omen. I immediately was like, oh, black squirrel medicine. And then Amy was like, no, girl, they're here.
That is so funny because, yeah, they're not really here. And so my first black squirrel, I was like the same thing of like, oh my gosh, look at this squirrel.
Yeah. I saw a white one this morning. I was looking out my window. I thought it was like a white buffalo. I was just sitting here looking out my window and I was like, what is that, a dog? Is it a little white dog? Nope. It was a white squirrel.
Oh, new goals. New goals for my squirrels.
New goals. So you've got red squirrels, black squirrels, of course, the gray ones. Shout out to the original. Have come back. Yeah.
Yes.
So what else you
but
got?
They're back, and that's great.
And they're
back. I have porcupines that live on my property. Let's see what else I have. I have foxes and raccoons. Like everything lives. Everything's back. The deer are in our yard all the time now. It's totally turned around. I have three hummingbirds now and several nesting birds. Wow. So it's really changed. I plant a lot of plants that I know have high impact. Like a couple of my bushes that I planted are really late berry producers. They'll produce berries in like November. Dang. And that's really important for those birds as they're coming through on the migration and everything. Yes. So yeah, there's so much that can be done. I'm barely scraping the surface. That's why it's a lifelong goal to keep figuring it out and returning the land back to what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you are already on this path, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like now you're doing it like hands-on, literally in the dirt, seeing the fruits of the labor, like being in connection to Mother Earth. How do you feel that's helped with your healing journey? Like seeing life blossom and return, what does that feel like to you as a survivor?
Yeah. The best way to describe it is it feels like a spiral. And that helped me understand grief better. I guess the easiest way to explain it is it's plants are so cyclical that it gave me space to see that there's a time for winter. There's a time for this release. There's a time for that underworld experience.
Yes.
But there's also a time for this rebirth. But it doesn't happen necessarily when you want it. Like there's always that time in spring where you're so impatient for spring to come.
Yes.
And you cannot handle it any longer.
Yes.
And that's how healing feels. You can see it, you know it, you're ready for it, but it's just not necessarily happening on this timeline that you want.
Yes.
And so plants give me that space to slow down, to look at them on their journey and on their cycle. I think one of the easiest ways to explain it is like you can take a deep breath in and you can keep breathing in until it gets so tight and your chest is so full that you need to release. And then there's this exhale out. And that's a lot of how plants work. That's a lot of how my healing seemed to go. I just felt like I had permission to give myself grace to go through the healing process when I had a model that was there doing it. And I just, it opened up that space to give myself the space.
I agree with that. Coming here in January and living through a brutal winter that they haven't experienced in like 100 years has been helping that.
Yeah.
Living in a city, like living in Brooklyn or, you know, just the life I had was so much more fast paced. I always had places to go, people to see, being in Connecticut, I'm taking care of my mother. It's COVID. Yes. I would look outside at the beautiful tree and watch it change. But there's something about, like you're saying, like a long ass winter. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm looking, I would just sit and I would just look at the trees and being there. And then they would try to bud and then we'd get snow. Then they try again and then they'd get snow. And that was like teaching me something about grief as well. And I was like, oh, we're like these plants. We're like these leaves.
Yes.
We try and then something happens and they shrink and now they're just like in bloom. But there's some that are still bare and it's May.
Yes. And that's allowed. They all have their different timelines. Something else I figured out about plants is like that timeline is their own and they stand in it with power that I started feeling like my timeline was too slow. My timeline wasn't going the way I wanted it to, other people's expectation of my timeline. And yet, if all the plants bloomed at once, there'd be no nectar and there wouldn't be enough for all of the pollinators throughout the season. And so it really gave me this permission to see it as my own pace and my own time. There's a beauty in that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
were there specific herbs or plants that you worked with to facilitate emotional healing?
I worked with catnip a lot.
Oh.
It's a very easy plant to grow. I grew it for my cats in the garden and they could really care less about it. So it became my plant. I know. I don't know why. I have a little patio so my cats can go outside in my garden. They're in like a little cage.
Mm-hmm.
And I planted catnip all around the cage and they don't care about it. No. So I eat the catnip. In fact, my mug is full of catnip tea right now. It's really light and minty. It's really good. But it was my first plant that I learned how to propagate really, really well outside. So you can just, catnip is so prolific. You can take a snip of the cutting, put the cutting in soil, and a whole new plant will grow. And it's that simple. I didn't believe it. I didn't think that. And then I kept trying it. And I have my like 8 catnip plants I grew myself. So that was something that was really helpful for me. But the main plant that I worked with a lot was the hops vine and milkweed. Milkweed is a common plant, pollinator plant. It's a native in this area and throughout most of North America.
Milkweed?
Yeah. And it's milkweed is named for its Asclepius is its Latin name. And that's named after the god of healing. So It was interesting to trace that plant of, it's been around forever. People have recognized it as this healing plant for so long.
Oh.
And yet it's disregarded as a weed right now.
And
it's also the only plant that the monarch butterfly caterpillars can eat. So planting it and working with it felt like this complete defiance of violence around me, that I got to plant this plant. And then here came these endangered species that needed it. And we now have a little relationship in our yard where I was able to provide this space for them. The caterpillar showed up and I have the butterflies in my yard now. And it's just defiant in terms of all the violence in the life. It just felt so beautiful to increase the life in my yard. And working with that plant gave me that. Thank you.
I love that. So I'm looking up milkweed. So I was recommended like 3 weeks ago, somebody recommended that I plant catnip.
Yeah.
I work with catnip in the herbal form for ritual. I have catnip circled here. So I just want to read because I feel like it's important for somebody out there. So catnip is good for love, beauty, happiness. It's associated with, guess what? Hello, Venus, again. Venus just trying to show out today. We love it. And it's, again, given to my cat loves catnip, but I wonder if he'll like the fresh. That'll be an interesting.
Yeah,
I'll be checking in. People use it for love. That's why I use it for glamour magic. But grown near the home or under the door, it attracts good spirits and good luck. And enhances beauty and happiness. So there you go, folks. Plant some catnip.
Yeah, it's beautiful for the pollinators too. So they love it. My flowers are always just buzzing.
Okay. Well, that's good. And then for milkweed, which was not in my encyclopedia of magical herbs, Milkweed. Again, sachets and for dreams, for pleasant dreams. Yeah, to strengthen your third eye. In World War II, military life jackets were filled with milkweed.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, and the god of healing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And the monarch caterpillars. Okay, well, maybe I'll get some milkweed too.
Yeah, I would really recommend it. It's a beautiful plant. It has these big, showy pink flowers. They're gorgeous.
Okay.
And then it has these big pods in the fall full of seeds that are like tufting out. It's really beautiful.
Perfect.
Yeah, and I have some seeds I can send you. So I'll send those over to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Milkweed. Okay. So I haven't done this in a while, but let's just take a pause here for a little reflection. So for folks who are listening, don't listen in the car, because I've had people text me and be like, okay, girl, I was just about to go into the meditation, but I'm in the car. So don't do that. But if you're in a place that's safe, that's quiet, just go ahead and just let your shoulders drop and maybe let your top lid fold over your bottom lid. Taking a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. We're just going to reflect on, if nature could speak to you right now, what comforting words might it offer? If nature could speak to you right now, what comforting words might it offer? And then the next question is, what small act of recognition to the earth can you make today? What small act of reconnection to the earth can you make today? No need to overthink, just the first things that come into your mind. Then you can go ahead and open your eyes. And if you feel comfortable, you can share your reflections with me at info@iamzoeflowers.com. I would love to hear from you. So we've talked about patience, the patience that you have gained, and the wisdom that Mother Nature offers us, especially when we're navigating grief. But what do you think we're losing as individuals and communities when we disconnect from Mother Earth?
Great question. I want to say everything. I think we lose that sense of incremental pace, kind of like we were talking about with the spring blooming. Right now, spring is blooming, and I hear so many people who are saying like, oh, it just came out of nowhere and it just sprang forth. And there's that day where it just, everything blooms and people know it now. But I've been looking at signs of spring since February, when I could stand on my deck and the light was returning for just an incremental amount of time. And so I think we almost lose the ability to see change as this very small steps forward. It's not really this huge leap, and it's so a couple steps forward. And then, like you said, it might snow and we might go back to the beginning. Yeah. But I think we really lose that sense of what growth actually looks like versus what we pretend and we would love to see it as a straight line. And I think that we lose that when we disconnect from the earth. And I think we lose a sense of community, in the last couple of years, I have spent a lot of time alone in my house. It's something that I feel more comfortable here than anywhere else. But I never feel alone. I know my plants. I know the trees near me. And that's something, even if you don't have property, you know, if you know the plants at your local park, there's a sense of community that's built in right there that I think we are disconnected from.
I agree. And if people are listening and you don't have a park that you know about or a park that's accessible, maybe just looking at the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Finding
the moon
waterway that's safe. Tap into the moon.
Yeah, the moon is just like plants with that cycle of growth and that cycle of release. I look at the new moon, the dark moon as the seed stage, and then the full moon, they're in flowers.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And people always tease me because they'll be like, they'll call me and be like, oh, look at the full moon. And they'll be like, I know you're going to say it's not full yet. I'm usually like, oh, it's not full yet. It's not waxing until Friday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I mean, that's what comes from like having that relationship with the moon. It's like watch her every day when we can see her, right?
Yes, yes. It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful first step.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how can gardening or just reconnecting with nature begin to heal deep wounds, do you think, beyond what we've talked about around the patients and all of that? What other ways do you think?
I think there's a resiliency to nature that we can learn from.
Mm-hmm.
There's a determination to nature that we can learn from. And there's a creativity that we can learn from. Like I said, you know, a lot of my plants either get pruned back or they die back in the fall, and there they come again in the spring. They're so resilient. They find a way to return. You know, I was walking through a park the other day and there was a tree that had grown so crooked that it was just reaching for light this way. And then it was reaching for light that way. And it was this, you know, totally wonky looking tree, but there it was surviving because it had this resiliency to adapt.
Yeah.
And I think that we can learn a lot from that. The determination and resiliency of plants. When I moved into this house, there were grapevines and I have a dog. So I had to get rid of the grapevines because grapes can be toxic to dogs. And I have yet to ever get rid of the grapevines. I killed them, tore them up from the ground, did everything. And the next year, 20 feet from where I killed that plant, and I laid cardboard and mulch and completely, you know, built a garden over that. And 20 feet away, a little grapevine traveled all the way underground and came up. And now I love my grape plants. They're safely away from my dog, but they just remind me so much of this determination that they will not. That I thought I had, you know, ripped the whole thing out, and there it came the next spring, just right there.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we miss a lot of that if we're not paying attention.
Paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah. And the creativity. Everything blooms different. Everything looks different every year. My garden is different, even though it's similar plants. And that's just, I think it's the plants expressing themselves in just a different way. It's just beautiful to see the creativity that they come up with every single year and how they look.
Yeah. Since starting this podcast, I've been talking with people about the fact that grief is a portal, and you have to.
I literally wrote that in my notes.
It is. It's a portal, and it'll slow you down if you let it. It'll slow you down because now I walk down my street and the people here, there's lots of gardens on my street and outside of these apartment buildings, and people just like, it's beautiful. And I walk and I'm looking at like each, the tulips are like my favorite. I also love daffodils. I know you were talking about daffodils and hydrangeas. People have like hydrangeas.
Oh, I love hydrangeas.
Tree.
Oh my gosh.
I've never seen it. I was like, are those hydrangeas on a tree? Is this a, but I guess if you keep letting something grow, it's going to turn into a tree.
Yeah. Wow.
So I just walk down the street like yesterday and I just like look at each one deeply and like each blossom, I'm like smelling people's trees. And I'm like, wow, grief really will slow you down. Because yes. I always would like walk down my street in Brooklyn and like touch the trees and talk to them and stuff like that. But I'm much slower now.
Yes.
Because I've gone yes. through this grief portal, or I'm in this grief portal. So everything feels more important.
I agree.
Going through this, there's something about witnessing death, being close to death, and like leaning into it. I think the way mm-hmm. that we both have, we didn't like run in the other direction. Like we leaned into
yes.
and let ourselves grieve. And I think that is like, yeah, it's just made something else blossom within us.
Yes.
So speaking of that, lightning struck gardens.
Yes.
What is it? How did it emerge?
It is my nonprofit. It is designed to support survivors of gun violence through community support groups. So I offer peer-led support groups where we come together for about an 8-week period. Once a week we meet and we go over, it's like an hour meeting, and there's like a 20-minute presentation in the beginning about what grief is, what trauma is, how it manifests in the body. We go through a different piece every week. There's the shame, the guilt, the regret, all those pieces that we can come and we really discuss and break down. You know, they're really beautiful groups where people come to talk about something that they usually don't have a space to talk about.
Yeah.
And then I also offer seed packets for memorial gardens. So I've had people begin their own memorial plant, memorial gardens, if they've lost someone. I have a garden for myself. So that's the mission. And we're supported by, I sell a lot of native plants and painted pots and different things on an Etsy shop. So that's how we get our funding.
Okay.
I also go to farmers markets.
Okay.
And Lightning Struck Gardens came about because I had two huge trees get struck by lightning back to back. And they came down in my property. And these were like 100-foot tall pines, the great pines, and they got struck by lightning and they came down, and I was able to chop them up, and I used the stumps and the logs to make garden beds. So all of my plants are grown in these garden beds with these logs that came down from a lightning strike, which was its own tower moment, its own lightning struck moment. It's so I used that name both as a personal thing and also as a reality. These trees were struck by lightning.
They were huge.
So that's how I got my garden beds. You know, it was thousands of dollars to have them removed, and I thought I could find a use for them. So we chainsawed them up, and I spent weeks flipping logs and moving them and bringing them throughout my yard. And now I have garden beds.
With all of them, did you have any left over, or?
I've used all of the logs for the garden beds. So,
okay, so yeah. The garden's huge.
My garden is huge. Yes.
My garden
is absolutely enormous. I will send you some snaps.
I was going to say, I need to see the garden. It's
huge.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's where that came from. So the name has kind of this beautiful homage to a lightning struck moment, the tower card, but also just the reality of this is how I got my garden bed.
Oh my gosh. And there was something in this, I'm trying to find it. There was something in that reading too about memorializing. It's just so interesting that you make memorial packets. Oh, here it is. To be the child survivor beyond its time is to over-identify with an injured archetype. And then here you were, you started this conversation saying, hey, I'm a survivor of gun violence, but I'm not defined from it. And then it says, to realize the injury and yet memorialize it, allows thriving to come forth. Again, moving from that tower moment to that star moment, it's just wow, like living the tarot. I love it.
Yes.
So how can people support Lightning Struck Gardens and you, your mission?
Well, I really appreciate the support and the shout out. They can go to my Etsy shop. I can send you the link and we can put it in show Perfect. Notes if that's
Absolutely.
Easier.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It's just Lightning Struck Gardens on Etsy. I sell all sorts of native plants that are native to most of North America. I pick ones that are pretty broad. I sell seed packets, and then I sell hand-painted pottery for the garden as well. And so that would be a huge support to get the more money that comes in, the more support groups we can offer, the more seed packets and plants we can send out. You know, it takes a little bit of space to rent some space to, or to hold the Zoom meetings. It's all a work in progress. It's very new. I founded Lightning Struck Gardens less than a year ago. So okay. It's all very new.
Okay.
And the Etsy shop is the best way to support me right now.
Okay. So you offer classes in person or just on Zoom or both?
So far I've done only Zoom, but my goal is to get in-person classes when we find a good space to rent. But it's right now my online classes are people from all over, and I want to bring them more local into my community. So,
right. Yeah, absolutely. Exciting. Okay. So as we come to a close, I always invite guests to share a final reflection. And so it's always, what are you grieving and what are you grateful for?
Yeah. Right now, I'm grieving for my country. I live in America and I'm really grieving for it right now. There's a lot of grief going on as I process all that's going on. And I'm grateful for this season. It's just a beautiful season of planting and new beginnings, and it just feels fresh right now. I always talk about this time of spring is this when the promise of summer starts to begin to come around. There's warmer days, and it's more than just spring. It's more than a hope. Now we're in it. My plants can go in the ground. Things are blooming all around me. Life has returned. I saw baby bunny yesterday. I'm grateful for the season that we're in.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, thank you so much. And one of the things I teach in my ritual class is how to live by the seasons. And so we'll talk about that after the call.
Yes.
But yeah, absolutely. It's very much plant aligned. So I love that. This has been such a great conversation and such a great opportunity to get to know you better, because we don't really know each other that well. And
no,
so
we don't.
Thank you so much. Is there anything else you have coming up that you want people to know about?
Well, first I want to say thank you for hosting me. This meant a lot. This was such a beautiful space to share my story and talk for the first time. And I really appreciate what we created here today. It was so nice to get to know you better as well. What else do people need to know? I think that's it. I'm busy right now just planting and growing, and growing metaphorically and growing literally. So there's a lot that's going on.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again for all that you shared. And just, folks, go out, check out Lightning. Let me make sure I got it. Yeah, Lightning Struck Gardens. And we love the concept. We love it, love it, love it. So next time we are going to be talking with Ashley Green. And Ashley is a survivor, an advocate, and the CEO of Rescue Her 33. After surviving domestic violence for 17 years, Ashley turned her experiences into a powerful mission, a mission of lifting women up out of trauma and into stepping into their own empowerment. And so we're going to explore how she broke free, how she's building community, and how she found her purpose. So thank you again for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Come to the Brink. You know, our episodes drop every Tuesday at 7:11 Eastern Standard Time, with bonus episodes dropping on Fridays. And of course, you can find us anywhere you listen to your podcasts. And if something moved you today, keep reaching out to me, keep sending me texts. You know, I love those. And as we always say, nobody deserves to stand on the brink alone. I'm Zoe Flowers, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.